Shabbat Shalom. So we are in part two of our sermon series on royals, how to rise into your destiny. In Messiah, you are a royal. Now, how to rise into that place and experience it is no easy task. The first to really accomplish it was Abraham and Sarah. It is no wonder they are called our father and our mother. This is your stock, your DNA, your spiritual ancestors, if you will. Discover what it means. Embrace it, release it, and live it. It will overtake you and sweep you into your legacy and destiny as a royal. So last week we looked at what God was doing in Abraham and Sarah's life. We learned that God is the one that empowers us to become wealthy. That's found in Deuteronomy 8. We'll look at that in a few moments. But we focused on three foundational principles of becoming influential, powerful, and wealthy. Number one, you must have a personal relationship with Jesus, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Got to have a personal relationship with the one who empowers us to become wealthy. Number two, we have to recognize that he is the source of authority, power, wealth, and purpose. Number three, we need to believe that his desire and will is to bless his people. This is the desire of God, to bless his people. We noted that Abraham and Sarai were notable in demonstrating how God's empowerment works. We looked into their background, took a snapshot of their family, their circumstances, as God called them out to love him and follow him. We highlighted the fact that God initiated this calling and promised blessings of influence, power, and wealth. And we witnessed Abraham and Sarai responding in love as they stepped out in faith to follow God. Today, we're going to pick up that story of the journey from an average life to an extraordinary life and how the promised blessings of God are designed to come to each and every one of us. Keep in mind that the scriptures make the case that every believer has as their spiritual father and mother, Abram and Sarai. So, before we begin, let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse number 18. This is a foundational passage in regard to the subject matter of influence, power, and wealth. Here it is. But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who is giving you power to make wealth, that he may confirm his covenant, which he swore to your fathers, as it is to this day. Now, I want you to think about this. The power to make wealth, that God gives us power to make wealth. Let me give you some other translations so you catch the power of this passage. Okay, let's look at it, the next four. The Lord gives you the power to become rich. Notice the shift. Wealth and riches. The Lord gives you the power to gain wealth, to gain it. For it is he who gives you the power to get wealth. It's the same passage found in different translations. He's the one who gives you the strength to be prosperous. He's the one that gives you the ability to produce wealth. Now, as we move forward, I just want to make this important clarification. When I talk about wealth and riches and power and authority, when I talk about prosperity, I'm referring to God's perspective and definitions, not the definitions and perspectives of this world. They have a different mindset and relationship to these ideas and also different strategies in how to pursue it and gain it. Suffice it to say, everyone wants to be prosperous. And those that don't, there are mental health professionals for you. There is something wrong with you if you don't want to be prosperous and to be healthy. This is the heart of God. And it doesn't mean that if you're not prosperous and you're not healthy, that God doesn't like you. That doesn't mean that at all. We live in a broken world. God's redeeming that. God's restoring that. Ultimately, all of us are going to be wealthy and healthy. That's what's coming. It's actually breaking into our reality all around us. It's already happening. We have to have a mind shift from the evil one who has planted in our hearts that somehow our Father is against us, wants to hold us down, wants to make sure we experience lack and poverty. It's not true. It's the opposite. It's the opposite. So I want us to get a healthy perspective on what it means to have godly prosperity and godly wealth. It's important to us and our families, to our nations. It's important to everyone. So let's pick up the story of our parents, Abram and Sarai. Genesis chapter 12, we left off with verse 10 last week. So let's pick it up. They've already made part of their journey. They've already stepped out in faith. They're already journeying with God, okay? Verse 10. Now there was a famine in the land. So Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. So Abram's already been on a journey with Sarai. They're coming down through the promised land. Big famine is taking place. They're going to go south into Egypt. It was a severe famine. It came about when he came near to Egypt that he said to Sarai, his wife, "See now, I know that you are a beautiful woman. And when the Egyptians see you, they will say, 'This is his wife.' And they will kill me, but they will let you live. So please say that you are my sister, so that it may go well with me because of you, and that I may live on account of you." This is a powerful passage. What Abraham's saying is true. Some of the ancient customs and cultures that were under abusive monarchs did these kind of things. His life could have certainly been at risk. And he's saying to his wife, "Sarai, help me out. You know, let's stretch the truth a little bit here. You know, it's code for let's tell a benign lie, so to speak, to save my life. Because surely they're going to take it. You're a beautiful woman. The king's going to want you in his harem," is what that's all about. Okay? Now, before we get into that, let me back up. A severe famine in the land. You and I cannot control the economy. The economy is going to be what it's going to be. A lot of different factors affect a nation's economy. And no one controls that. It's too complicated. Okay? So you can't just figure out the economy and make it work for you and gain wealth and riches. It doesn't work that way. There's someone you and I have to trust in if we want to learn how to build godly wealth. We cannot control the economy. However, when you're in God's will, the economy cannot control you. Keep that in mind as well. Genesis 12, 14 through 15. And it came about when Abram came into Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. Pharaoh's officials saw her, praised her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. Why do you think she's being taken into the house? What do you think that's all about? She's going to be part of the king's harem. He's bringing her in against her will to be part of his harem. He has many wives. It's his wives' club. It's about as sexist and oppressive as you can get on a national level. How do you think she's feeling? Ladies, how would you feel if you were in her shoes? What would you be thinking if you were in her shoes? What do you think sustains Sarah? Her faith. All she has is her faith. She doesn't have anything else. What does she have to see her through this? Zero. Other than the word of the Lord that God already spoke to Abraham, her husband, right? She has the word of the Lord. She has the promises of the Most High God. It's that faith in what God has said that's going to see her through an incredibly difficult circumstance. This is why they're called the mother and father of our faith. They're the very defining couple in terms of faith and how to walk it out. We can learn so much from them. They are our role models. This is why we read the Torah portions. And while we're reading the Torah portions, we say, God, where am I in this portion? You know, how do I relate to the portion? What would I do if I was in this portion? Because actually, we're their, what, descendants. In some ways, we are connected in that ancestry. It's your story. It's my story. We're all connected. And so we can learn a tremendous amount from these stories. And especially when we ask the Holy Spirit, come, show me where I'm at in my story. Help me connect with this. What am I going through? How's it similar? And what can I learn from my spiritual parents that can see me through this very difficult time? Genesis 12:16. Therefore, Pharaoh, he treated Abram well for her sake. He bought the lie. So he treats Abram well for her sake and gave him sheep, plural, oxen, plural, donkeys, plural. He even gave him male and female servants and female donkeys in addition to the donkeys already given, and camels. Okay, think about that for a minute. That is a substantial increase of wealth. That's not a little bit of wealth. We're talking about an increase that's exponential in terms of how much that is. Abraham just becomes, you know, the recipient of a large amount of wealth. Genesis 12:17. But the Lord struck Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. I mean, think about that, right? You think God is concerned about Abram and Sarai? God says, I'm the one that gives you the power to become wealthy. I know what's going on. I'm overseeing all of it. You're going to need some wealth, Abram and Sarai, in order to establish the covenant that I'm making with you. So I'm going to give you some of that. I'm just going to put it into your hands. But the way I'm going to do it, it's going to shake you upside down and all around. So here they are, right, in a difficult set of circumstances, which in the end turns out to be a blessing. And he's watching over Sarai. Here's Sarai in the king's harem thinking, what happens to me now, right? But she, like Abraham, has faith that somehow God's going to make this work out. God says, it's okay, Sarah, I'll take care of it. And he strikes this house with plagues. Now, let me help you out with this. When men are stricken with debilitating illnesses, it kind of puts a damper on the harem department. You know what I mean? Now, it doesn't tell us what kind of plagues they are, but I can tell you that it would have been painful in the areas that would have been quite discouraging to any man wanting to have some kind of date night. This is how he protects Sarai. This is how God orchestrates and protects his people through all kinds of unexpected happenings. God is sovereign. He watches over his people. We see these stories over and over and over. It's the story of Purim on a smaller scale, of course. But nonetheless, God involves himself in the lives of his people. Genesis 12:18-19. Then Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this you have done to me? You know, this is our charismatic part. We're a messianic charismatic church, signs and wonders all the time. I'm telling you. Okay. So Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister so that I took her for my wife?" We have here a highly edited story. There's a lot that's taking place here that we're not told. But suffice it to say, they connected all the dots. And now the Pharaoh has approached Abram and is holding him accountable for what has happened. Verse 19 through 20. "Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go." Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they escorted him away with his wife and all that belonged to him. Think about that. He just gave him a whole lot of wealth and then turns on a dime, and what does he say? He says, "Abraham, take your stuff and go." Take your stuff, even gives him an escort out of the land. So here they are, due to a famine, they go down to Egypt, they get themselves in a big, big mess, and God turns it around, and it becomes this blessing that's enormous in their life. Do you think that Abraham's becoming the prototype for later this passage in Deuteronomy, where God says, "I'm the one that empowers my people to become wealthy"? He says, "Don't forget, I'm the one that's doing this, lest you think you did it in your own power. I'm the one that navigates things behind the scenes." I don't know how many times God has rescued us and blessed us, and we never even knew it. We never connected the dots. He's at work behind the scenes. He's for you, not against you. It's amazing to see these stories unfold. Okay, so Romans 8:28 says this, "And we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God and to those who are called according to his purpose." Based on the circumstances, it looked like that whole story promised Abraham was over. And yet, it became part of the story. It becomes the very thing that God uses to bless them. What looked like the end of the story was actually the beginning of the story. This is God at work on behalf of his people. Genesis 13, 1 through 10. "Abraham went up from Egypt to the Negev, he and his wife and all that belonged to him, and Lot with him." Now, Abraham was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. Emphasis mine. I capped very rich. He wasn't just rich. He was uber rich. He was very rich. A synonym would be wealthy. He was very wealthy. How did he get all of his wealth? God. God is the one that released it through different circumstances into his life. But note and know well that he did that because Abraham was walking by faith. He had his trust in God, and he was walking in step with the rhythm of his spirit. And the result was, as God says, "I'll move mountains on your behalf. I'll do signs and wonders. I will show myself strong in you because you have put your trust in me." Where is your trust? What are you going through? What has God already promised you? Do not give up. Do not give in. Do not be discouraged. Your life is being written. Your life is being recorded. Man, all of heaven will stand behind you as you live by faith. Never give up. So Abraham was very rich in livestock, silver, and in gold. Riches are not bad. Wealth is not evil. What's evil is coveting other people's riches. The nation's all in an uproar because our leaders have sucked us into this place where we're looking at everyone else saying, "I want their stuff," And they're promising, if you vote for me, I'll give you their stuff. That's covetousness. It'll just divide and destroy a nation. I look at rich people, I don't get bothered. I think, wow, good for you. I'm learning how to do that too. The good news is God wants to bless everyone. He wants everyone to rise up into his blessings, into his provision. We should focus on that and live by faith. Help each other, right? Poverty is not a blessing, people. It's not virtuous. Proverbs 10:22 says, "It is the blessing of the Lord that makes rich, and he adds no sorrow to it." Riches without sorrow. That is the blessing of God. Genesis 13:3-4. "And he," Abram, "went on his journeys from the Negev as far as Bethel to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there formerly. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord." Abram took time and invested it in his relationship with God. The secret of building wealth is spending time with the one who makes you wealthy. That's so key, people. They built an altar. What does that mean? They took time out to invest in their relationship with God. They set their priorities in such a way that God was number one, that they would look to him, get their marching orders from him, that they would live in accordance with what he was saying. This is part of the key to gaining and obtaining God's prosperity. Learn to run with him. Learn to listen to him. Learn to relate to him. This is the number one rule in terms of walking out the blessings of God. Do you have an altar? Do you spend time with the Lord like your father Abraham and your mother Sarai? Are you cultivating a relationship with him? How will you ever make it through this maze that we're in right now as a nation without God's help, right? How would you describe your relationship with the Lord? Is it hot? Would you say, man, my relationship with God is hot, right? Or would you say it's cold? It's just non-existent. Probably neither one of those. You know where most of us would fall? Well, you know, I don't spend a lot of time, but I do spend some time, right? I'm not hot and I'm not cold. Yeah, that's a dangerous place to be. Be hot or cold, but don't be in that lukewarm place. Give your all or give nothing. That's where you want to be, right? Because that middle thing will put you to sleep and God will come like a roaring lion, and that's never a good experience when you're waking up out of your sleep. Good. All right. Genesis 12:5-6. "Now Lot, who went with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents, and the land could not sustain them while dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to remain together." Again, uber rich, right? The nature of God's blessings is that they always increase. Note God's blessings. They're always increasing, building, increasing. This is who God is. God is amazing in every way. His heart to bless is so, so powerful. He loves us. He loves you. It doesn't mean there won't be hardships, trials, tribulations. No, he'll actually allow those to come. He'll use those to build your faith. But his goal, his heart, is that you would experience his blessings. The nature of God is to bless, grace upon grace. "Now there was strife," verse 7, "between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. Now the Canaanite and the Perizzite were dwelling then in the land." So they're in the land of Canaan. They're going to separate now. But our author makes this important side note. Out of the blue, he says, "Now the Canaanite and the Perizzite were dwelling in the land." What does that mean? It means that you get these major people groups that have been there for many, many years. that have already settled the land, cultivated the fields, dug the wells, the cisterns. They have livestock that have multiplied. Houses built, right? We're talking about cities in this land. It's a settled land. Think about that. 8 through 13. So Abram said to Lot, please, let there be no strife between you and me, nor between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brothers. Is not the whole land before you? Please, separate from me. If to the left, then I will go to the right, and if to the right, then I will go to the left. Lot lifted up his eyes and saw the valley of the Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you go to Zoar. So Lot chose for himself all the valley of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed eastward. Thus they separated from each other. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled in the cities of the valley and moved his tents as far as Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly and sinners against the Lord. So here they are, stretching out to the east and west, stretching out into the land that's already settled by other people groups. And the note here is that those in Sodom are exceedingly wicked, sinners against the Lord. All these things that we read about have traction to some degree in every generation. We see these same problems within people groups and in humanity, because that war between good and evil rages on. And the players change, but those ancient entities that are here in every generation remain. And so you see this kind of in an ebb and flow throughout human history taking place. And every human being has the choice and makes the choice of whether they're going to participate in the kingdom of darkness or the kingdom of light. If they're going to join in the side of the good or the side of the evil in their pursuits in life. But this is what this is all about. Let's go on. Genesis 12, 14 through 15. The Lord said to Abram after Lot had separated from him, now lift your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward. For all the land which you see, I will give it to you and your descendants forever. But Lord, isn't that someone else's land? Hear me. Lord, this land is not our land. It belongs to someone else. They've been here hundreds of years, maybe longer. That's their real estate. That's their livestock. You're going to give us their land? Do you realize how much land there was that was unsettled at this time in human history? God could have gave them land that was unsettled. Now, it would have took generations and generations to cultivate that land, to build that wealth. But God chooses, no, I'm going to go ahead and give you wealth already established, and it's someone else's wealth. I don't know about you. I always think thoughts like, didn't you say thou shalt not covet? And yet you're saying, look at that. It's a land filled with milk and honey, you know? Houses already built, cisterns, livestock, you know? This gets a little confusing, you know, to be honest with you, it's a little confusing. Now, I'm not complaining, but it is a little bit confusing. This is someone else's land. It's already settled. If we go in and take it, won't they accuse us of being deceivers, invaders, thieves, murderers? Or will they understand and believe us if we tell them, well, it's God that gave us your land? You think they're going to buy that? God gave us your land. If you're having a problem with us coming in here and taking your land, you're going to have to take that up with God. You think that's going to fly? That will not fly. That will not fly. But it's true. Who owns the land? God. He's the creator. It all belongs to him. And he determines who gets what, when, where, and why. And that doesn't mean that when other people take other people's land, that's a God thing. But sometimes it is. Sometimes it is. In this instance, it is. And it has ramifications that are felt even to this very day. And it isn't just Israel that he did this for. He has displaced people groups more than once, more than several times. He has championed the cause of other nations where he has given other people groups other people's stuff, just like he gave Israel the land of Canaan. It's not just Israel that he has basically helped. He's the God that says, if you'll serve me and love me, I'll establish you as a nation. But if you rebel against my ways, my laws, I'll uproot you as a nation. I'll displace you as a nation. I'll give your nation to someone else. That's who God is. That's what he's done over and over. It's not always clear if it's a God thing or if it's just the abuse of people, groups that are more powerful than others, but we've got the example of this over and over and over. Think of the verse. The wealth of the wicked is laid up for the righteous. I can't think of a clearer example than this. The Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hittites, the Ites, all these other Ites, right? They had become so perverted in the land. The things they were doing to each other, to the land, to their kids, it was so systemic, widespread, so far gone, that God says, that's it. I've been gracious and compassionate, help you build that wealth, and you have rebelled against me for generations. And now, I'm going to give you what you've amassed to someone else. The wealth of the wicked laid up for the righteous. Israel was righteous, not in their own ways, but because they put their trust in the Lord, he accounted to them righteousness. And because of that, he would then give them not only favor, but wealth already amassed. I remember this guy, I used to work with him many years ago, decades ago, and he was investing in the stock market, and he was always, you know, always talking about the different stocks that he was invested in, what they were doing, how well they were doing, and he was very methodical, very strategic. He was a good investor, and yet he was a wildcat. Man, that guy was just like, I think he was maybe the catalyst for the Me Too movement. He was bad to the bone. And he used to brag about that all the time. And so when he'd come over to me and show me how his investments were doing, I'd always tell him, hey, praise God. I hope they're doing good. In fact, I'm praying that they'll continue to increase. He goes, now, why would you do that? He says, you know I'm completely the opposite of you. Completely the opposite. You're like religious. I could care less about God, you know. I'm going to do my thing. Why would you pray that my investments would just flourish? I said, because the wealth of the wicked is laid up for the righteous. I said, you're doing a good job. Thank you. Keep it up. Because someday that's coming to me. You know, that was my idea. I don't know, you know. Okay, so it pays to serve the living God. So he goes on to tell Israel, he says, or Abraham and Sarai, I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if anyone can number the dust of the earth, your descendants can also be numbered. Who's he talking to? He's talking to two old people that are past their childbearing years, and they're barren, always had been. What's he saying to them? What do you think that means to them? Our descendants, what? We don't even have one. We don't even, We don't even have one child, and we're past having the opportunity of having a child. People, God's ways are not our ways. Oftentimes, they'll seem so counterintuitive. But no matter how upside down and crazy that may seem, embrace God. Embrace His ways. It's going to work out. He's sovereign over the universe. Genesis 12, 17 through 18. Arise, walk about the land through its length and breadth, for I will give it to you. Then Abraham moved his tent and came and dwelt by the oaks of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and there he built an altar to the Lord. You catch that? At every major shift in his life, as he lives or walks his faith out, he builds an altar. Again, over and over and over, we see this idea that Abraham builds a relationship with God. He cultivates his relationship with God. He fosters it. Abraham and Sarai have a living relationship with God. That's the fountainhead of all of their blessings. It's all going to go back to their simple trust and faith and relationship in the living God. I cannot encourage each and every one of us to make that the priority, to seek God and His kingdom first and foremost, to have relationship with Him, to pursue His righteousness. All the other things are going to work out. I promise, they're all going to work out. You might have to die first, but it will work out. It's all going to work out. But I believe a lot of that's coming to us even now in this life. We are a blessed people. We are. Okay. I want to make some statements in my conclusion and then some applications. Abraham and Sarah's journey included many challenges. I've talked about the high points. I've marked the blessings. But I haven't really dealt with their crisis of faith or multiple crises of faith. But they had plenty of challenges in their life. We read the story and it's here and gone within 30 seconds, you know, a couple minutes. But what we're looking at in that story oftentimes occurs over weeks, months, and even years before we get to the next paragraph. And so when we see their challenge and then we see, oh, well, this is what they ended up with, it looks like it happened pretty quick. No, in some instances, years would go by. In other words, their challenge was years of potential discouragement and trial and tribulation. That's part of the story. God forbid that I would paint a picture that godly prosperity comes overnight and there are no trials or tribulations. That's not true. Plenty of trials, plenty of tribulations on our path to godly prosperity. So, many challenges, threats, trials, and tribulations. But they put their trust in the living God. They said, God, you're number one, your kingdom first. Then God began to give them strength and ability and opportunity to become wealthy, prosperous, influential, and powerful. That's how it works. So, three crucial takeaways for you, Abram and Sarai's children. Number one, they cultivated their relationship with Him. I encourage you, I challenge you, I charge you to make sure that you schedule time with God every day. Every day. He's worth the investment. Just the relationship alone is worth it all. If that's all, if all we had is the ability to connect with the Creator in a way that's healthy and relational, that alone would be enough. That alone would be enough. But as we do that, God says, oh, I'm going to pour out so much on you. You spend time with me, walk in my ways, I will pour out blessings that you couldn't even begin to comprehend, and they will come to you. So, cultivate relationship with God. Be in His Word daily, even if it's only 30 minutes in the morning. Do a couple. I call it a cup of Joe with Jesus. You know, I make some coffee. I think He likes coffee. I don't know. I like coffee. I drink coffee and I do my devotionals. I do worship. I spend time in the Word. I've learned the power of relationship. We're very busy. We have a lot of responsibilities. It's easy to skip that and to miss that, sometimes for weeks at a time. You know, that's the devil. That's the world trying to distract you from what is important and real. You know, Abraham and Sarah, their life, it's our inheritance, our heritage, right? It's our legacy. Number two, they lived by faith and obedience to his word and his ways rather than circumstances. Don't make your big decisions based on circumstances. It's a mistake. It's a trap. It will not be beneficial for you in the long run. Maybe in the short run, but not the long run. You need to say, God, what is your idea? What are you doing here? What have you called me to be and to do? And that's what you need to focus on. You need to just put your trust in God, and whatever it is he's saying, that's what you do. Even though all of hell itself comes against you, you stay the course. You stay the course. You walk by faith, and God will turn the tables every time. He'll move the mountains on your behalf. So are you living by faith or by your circumstances? It's okay to recognize and acknowledge circumstances. I'm not asking anyone to be a denier. You know, you can just like analyze those circumstances as much as you want to, but at the end of the day, recognize they're simply my circumstances, and God is greater than my circumstances. And I'm not going to make a decision based on my circumstance. I'm gonna make that decision based on what God is leading me to do, that which is in alignment with his word. So you say, well, I'm facing this or I'm facing that, and I'm not sure how to get around that. What do I do? Your greatest weapon, your greatest resource is your relationship with God, right? Think about this. When you dialogue with God and then you listen and wait on him, what do we call that? Prayer. Your prayer time daily is the most powerful doorway to resource that there is in the universe, because you're tapping into your Father in heaven, who's the creator of all things seen and unseen. What do you need? I mean, he's the God that says, there's nothing. And from nothing, he says, bam, let there be light. Bam, there's light. Man, he can just bring things into existence that are not even in existence. So what does he say to you and me, his children, when we're facing incredible challenges? What does he say? He says, ask, and it shall be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will open for you. For everyone who asks receives. He who seeks finds, and to him who knocks, it will be opened. People, you are unlimited in your resources. There's no challenge you'll ever face, no trial, no tribulation that will ever come against you that you don't have the resources to overcome it. Because he is sovereign over it all. He can cause it to work together to your well-being. That's who he is. We got to trust in him. And because I have relationship, because you have relationship, and you go and say, Abba, here's my circumstance. What do I do? And this is what I need. I'm asking for it. I'm seeking for it. I'm knocking on the doors of heaven, i.e. I'm praying, right? I have relationship. I've got an altar, and I'm listening to you. God says, because you've asked, you're going to receive. In my time, in my way, but it's coming. So get ready. Because you knocked, the door will open. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but it's going to open. So get ready, son. Get ready, daughter. I will open that door, right? Because you have relationship with me and I love you. Ask and I'll give it to you. Seek, I'll help you find it. Knock and I'll open that door for you. Because I love you. You're my children. It's what Abraham and Sarah do over and over and over. It's what we need to do. My final one is, and God did the rest, right? Cultivate relationship with him, live by faith, and let God do the rest. Learn to trust and wait on him. They loved God. They invested in their relationship with him. They walked by faith in his ways and commandments, and God blessed them, and they became very rich, very influential, and very powerful. People of God, get your game on. Get your game on. Rise up and shake off your chains. You are destined as royals for blessing, prosperity, power, authority, and influence. In Messiah, you are royalty. Embrace it. Act like it. Live it and share it with others. Proclaim, proclaim, proclaim that God so loved the world that he gave us his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. And then tell people that eternal life is prosperous and abundant, and it begins in the here and now and will increase forevermore. That's it. Shabbat shalom. Love you.
And Yahweh spoke to Moshe, saying, "Speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, this is the way you shall bless the children of Israel. Say to them, may Yahweh bless you and keep you. May Yahweh make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May Yahweh lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace." And we add, "In the name of Yeshua our Messiah, the Prince of Peace, so they shall put my name on the children of Israel, and I will bless them. Receive now the name of Yahweh."
Yivarechecha Yahweh ve'yishmerecha. Yaher Yahweh panavelecha ve'yihunecha. Yisa Yahweh panav lecha vayasem lecha shalom.
B'shem Yeshua HaMashiach, Sar HaShalom, Shabbat Shalom.